The opinions voiced in this program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, and financial advisor or tax advisor prior to investing. Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advice offered through Northwest Quadrant Wealth Management, a registered investment advisor and separate entity from LPL Financial. Welcome to Financial Focus Radio Show. Today, you will hear the truth in wealth building from Troy Reinhart and Tyler Simonis of Northwest Quadrant Wealth Management. We hope you enjoy the next 2 hours of wealth building knowledge. If you have a question for the show, go to financialfocusradio.com. Now, from our studios in beautiful Bend, Oregon, to you all over the Northwest, here's Troy and Tyler.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Financial Focus Radio, the truth in wealth building. I was trying to avoid the Bend downtown parking stormtroopers as I came into the show today, and I am well-dressed today because I have a function to go to. I'm wearing a suit and tie versus Tyler's casual attire, but as I'm walking down the street, a guy walking a very nice golden retriever says to me, I said, good morning. And he says, well, good morning, counselor. So I guess everybody who wears a tie
that's,
on Saturday.
That's a common thing when you wear a suit.
So especially to all my lawyer friends out there, I guess I've been reduced to your ranks and I'll have to stay there.
Attorney or undertaker?
I'd hate to admit I'd rather be an undertaker than a lawyer. And they have many things. The professions have many things in common with each other.
Oh, jeez.
Good morning, Tyler.
Now that you've offended everybody, good morning.
That's my nature here on Northwest Quadrant Wealth Management-sponsored Financial Focus Radio. Glad you'd be with us. Well, first of all, what we have to do is it's time to say happy birthday.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday.
It is the 9th anniversary of the bull market. Started on Friday, March the 9th, 2009, when the market and S&P 500 hit a market low 666, and it turned the corner and went up, and it's went up some 380% since then. So happy birthday, bull market. And quite a ride it's been, hasn't it, Tyler?
Yeah, it's also tomorrow is my son Finn's 13th birthday, so now officially have a teenager.
Oh, I will shed tears for you and express pity to you. Well, in the last 9 years of the bull market, in the first 3 years following the bottom on March the 9th, 2009, bear market closing of low of 666 intraday, closing low was actually 667. The S&P 500 gained 114% through 2012. And for in the next 6 years, it gained about 100 and – where is that on here? In the next 6 years, it gained an additional 125%. So if you missed the first 3 years, which people who got out of the market did, you missed a big run, almost half the run. So it's staying in the market and being a long-term investor that is important.
Yeah, I mean, if you had invested at the very peak in 2007 and stayed invested to the net today, you would be way ahead. And so, you know, that's just the nature of investing. If it was easy and people, there was no volatility, people, you know, wouldn't seek help and there wouldn't be all this giant industry surrounding helping people manage their money.
So on Friday, we saw a big rally to tap off the week with an exclamation point, all brought on by a good jobs report. So Tyler, give us the numbers.
Yeah, so obviously in the U.S. market, stocks were significantly higher last week, led higher by small cap stocks. So we saw a big move up in small cap stocks, rightfully so. They let it down, and so they're leading us back up. In international markets, Asia actually didn't have a very good week. Asia was only up about a little less than 0.5%. But Europe was certainly higher last week also. In the U.S. bond market, we saw yields move higher, especially on Friday, because obviously of that jobs report we're going to talk about and the threat of the Federal Reserve raising rates. Gold had an unbelievably volatile week, but it essentially ended unchanged. And oil, while it's at $62 a barrel, it also was unchanged. So, Trey, the big news, market-making news last week, other than the bull market turning 9 years old, was obviously the jobs report on Friday and then the president coming out with the steel and aluminum tariffs. And so let's first talk about the jobs report, because to us that's more important. The U.S. economy added 313,000 jobs in the month of February. That's 100,000 more than economists had expected. So at that point, they're just guessing. It's the biggest gain in 18 months. Unemployment rate is now at a 17-year low of 4.1%. And by all definition, that means we're at full employment. We're actually ahead of full employment. Full employment, I think, if I remember back to my college economics textbooks, was about 4.5% or 4.6%, and we're well below that by many millions of jobs in this country. The construction industry hired the most people in 1 month that they have in 11 years. So the construction industry hired a gob of people. But what does all this mean, I guess, for you, right? It gives it a higher probability that the Fed's going to raise rates at their next meeting. And now the talk is 4 rate hikes instead of 3. But we'll see. I mean, there was some economic noise, I guess, is the best way to describe it in this number. And that, because January, this number wasn't quite as good as everybody thought. And a lot of that had to do with the weather. And then the weather was better in February. And so if you smooth the numbers out, the jobs numbers are still good. And at the end of the day, the unemployment rate is 4.1%, which the last time I think it was there was, in the late 2000s. I remember I was in college
2000,
last time. Yeah.
In 2000.
Yeah. So, well, I wasn't in college then, but. And so the one thing that was interesting and the market certainly liked last week in the jobs report. So, you know, what happens is jobs number comes out, market reacts, and then everybody looks at sort of the underlying where the jobs were added, what the wage numbers look like, and really we saw no wage pressure in the wage growth in the employment report, which markets definitely like, because remember, markets are always on the lookout for inflation, and with inflation comes higher interest rates. And so markets really applauded this jobs number because we got a lot of jobs added, but there wasn't much wage growth, which eased the market's concerns about inflation, and stocks took off.
So that's what happened with the big jobs report. And then, of course, the president on Tuesday or Friday of last week tried to scare the heck out of the markets by announcing steel and aluminum tariffs. And he announced those on Thursday and what they're going to be and how they're going to work. And as usual, the bark was worse than the bite when it comes to news in the markets. And markets tended that it was no big deal anymore.
Yeah, I mean, without telling you what I think about these tariffs, because it doesn't really matter what I think. They're certainly going to move markets one way or another. So as this story plays out, it might sort of recede back from the headlines, which is probably what will happen. But if it stays sort of – if we have a trade war or any of those kind of things, then markets will be volatile around that. And the reason for that is markets hate uncertainty. And the uncertainty that this potentially could create, I don't think it's going to do anything from an uncertainty standpoint. But again, markets don't like uncertainty, and that will be another volatility, which gets to my next point, which is in 2018, volatility is going to be back. And so what does that mean for you? It means that discipline is going to become an important part of your investing life again. And so you're going to need to bring discipline back, you need to have an asset allocation model that is appropriate for you, meaning the right mix of stocks and bonds and then the right mix within each of those categories, and then stay disciplined to that. Remember, deal with what you can control, which is how you behave when markets are doing certain things, what your asset allocation looks like, and then the securities you hold in your portfolio. Those are the things you can control. What you can't control is the stock market in the short term, so don't worry about it.
And we're going to talk about discipline and noise and keeping a disciplined stance in your wealth-building efforts coming up here in the show, because it's very important, because with volatility comes volatile emotions for many of you, and you have to be careful. If you have a question for the show, call us 877-670-7117 or email us. Go to financialfocusradio.com, click on contact, send us an email, and we will let you know we got it and what we're going to talk about it on the show, because the things and the questions and the items that you bring up with us is what we're going to talk about, because we know it's important to you, and that's what we want to do here on Financial Focus Radio. We'll be right back after these free enterprise messages.
Connect to the Financial Focus Radio Show on our social networks, Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. Listen to past shows, get our daily market blog, and keep up to date on market happenings. Let's get back to the show.
Well, Financial Focus is always a party, but today it's a particularly boisterous party as we celebrate the 9th anniversary of this bull market, starting on March the 10th, 2009. The market had turned from its bottom of a low of 6677 closing low and started to go higher. In the nearly 9 year run, or in the 9 year run for the S&P 500 that began on that morning on March the 10th, 2009, the S&P 500 has gained almost 390% through Friday, an annualized return of 19.1% per year. During the entire 9 years, the index has had 5 separate corrections of at least 10%, but less than 20%. So volatility is the norm, and just a run-of-the-mill correction like we just most recently seen shouldn't be enough to scare people off, should it, Tyler?
No, and it was 9 years ago last week that I came out from under my desk where I was sucking my thumb and wondering if the world was going to end. But yeah, I mean, you know, that market, I mean, people that lived through it remember it was definitely frightening and scary, because it was probably the closest we had come since the Cuban Missile Crisis to life as we knew it changing. If the Treasury and the Federal Reserve didn't do certain things, it could have been really, really ugly. And a lot of Americans don't know how close we were to sort of the brink of things being very different in this country. And, you know, I have to say I'm surprised at how quickly markets came back and how sharply they came back. You know, we didn't have exactly robust economic growth, but we had low interest rates, and so low interest rates can support higher asset prices, and that's what we saw, and so that's why we've seen such an unbelievable, in terms of length, bull market.
Because all the quote unquote experts predicted when we were near the bottom or going through that. I remember meeting with many of them and going to investment conferences, and they all talked about the L-shaped recovery.
Or the new normal. Remember, what's his name?
Allianz.
He was at Harvard, and then he went to Allianz. But Muhammad Al-Aryan, he talked about the new normal. Bill Gross talked about the new normal. If this is the new normal, I'll take it.
Yeah. And what are the most famous words in investing, Tyler?
This time it's different.
And that's what they were trying to tell us. And so we had a V-shaped recovery, and just like it usually is. And
those words are famous because they're so wrong. That statement, this time it's different, is famous because it's such a wrong. I mean, it's never different, right? History sort of rhymes, and the characters, and it's never different. I mean, we've been through that before. We'll go through it again.
Well, and a great book that proves that is The History of the United States in 5 Market Crashes, written by Scott Nations. It's a great book. It takes you through 5 corrections of 1907 through the 2011 flash crash. And the one thing when I read the book, it's a good read, it's an easy read, it's a good historical read. But the one thing I took away is while the cast of characters change and the actual item that caused it to happen changed, it's all based on leverage, greed, underregulation,
and human
and mistakes.
Behavior.
Yeah, and mistakes by the government and human behavior. So it just proves again that this time isn't different at all. And so the most costly words are, this time is different. So don't fall prey to those. Well, Tyler has a shame of the week for us.
Yeah, and it goes to the ivy-covered walls of the Harvard Endowment in Cambridge, Massachusetts. So the story and the point I'm trying to make here is that there are so many so-called expert money managers out there in this country that tout themselves as having the greatest black box, and you know, that if you give them your money or an endowment gives them their money, that they are just going to do wonderful things. And there was an article in Bloomberg Business Week last week that was really good. The title of it was "The Harvard Bet That Went Splat: How the Harvard University Invested in Brazilian Tomatoes, Australian Cotton, and Romanian Timber and Lost $1 billion." So, what Harvard does now is there's a head portfolio manager, a guy that sort of oversees, and then he decides where money gets allocated. And so, you know, for a long time they did it in-house. They were managing the stock and the bond portfolio, the private equity, the hedge funds. And then this guy said, you know, they had a bad track record. And so they said, okay, we're going to redo things. We're going to outsource all our management to outside managers. So we're going to have a private equity manager. We're going to have a natural resource manager. We're going to have a commodities. We're going to have all these different managers. Well, the natural resource part of Harvard's endowment in the period of about 3.5 years lost $1.1 billion on a $37 billion portfolio. So, I mean, they had to write down – they gave the natural resources group $2.9 billion and they lost $1.1 of it. And so – the thing that's mind-boggling to me is in a four-year period, the money managers at Harvard were paid $242 million. And the 10-year number on the Harvard endowment annualized is 4.4%. So if you had just bought a 10-year treasury bond 10 years ago, you would have done better than the Harvard endowment. And had significantly less volatility. So, you know, it's just mind-boggling that an endowment this size with this much prestige would allow that much money, donor money, to go out there and be managed so inappropriately. I mean, and they were investing in like teak and all these ridiculous things that they had to just get back out of a 60-40 portfolio. So 60% stock in just the S&P 500 and a 40% bond portfolio, 60-40 would have beaten it by 50%, would have beaten the Harvard endowment by 50% with less volatility. A fraction of the cost and less volatility. So there's actually the funny thing. There's a group of alumni from the class of 1969 that are lobbying Harvard heavily just to invest the endowment in index funds and get rid of all the managers. Maybe have one manager that just oversees the index funds and maybe pay them $1 million a year instead of the many hundreds of millions that they were making. So my point in bringing this up, whether it's Harvard or, you know, you name the endowment, I mean, in this they show – the average endowment did 4.6. So while Harvard's underperformed the average was awful too. I mean, the two that did the best were MIT and Columbia, but theirs were more traditional in terms of their asset allocation, meaning they own more traditional allocations to stock and bonds like a Buffett would rather than all this private equity and hedge funds and all these kind of things. So this goes back to last week when we talked about Buffett and the bet he made with that hedge fund that the S&P 500 would beat the hedge fund over a 10-year period and Buffett easily won. I'm telling you all of this, and this is a shame of the week because complicated and expensive doesn't equate to value. Now, we charge our clients to manage their money, but how we manage their money and allocate it is not complicated, and we use very low-cost things because we know over time owning great businesses is going to serve our clients very well, and it's going to be less volatile. Now, when you add all this extra stuff in there, it adds a ton of cost. You lose liquidity, and in most cases, the returns don't get better. So stick to simple and low cost and things you understand, and you will be fine.
If you want to find out how we do it at Northwest Quadrant Wealth Management, give us a call at our worldwide headquarters, 800-743-0988. Schedule your free one-hour review, portfolio review, no cost, no obligation. Again, call our worldwide headquarters, 800-743-0988, and sign up for your free hour with Troy Tyler or one of our other financial professionals. When we come back, we're going to talk more about emotions, I'm sure, so you want to stick around.
You're listening to Financial Focus Radio Show, where you get straightforward financial advice every week from the partners at Northwest Quadrant Wealth Management. Troy Reinhardt and Tyler Simonis tackle the many issues that we face in our wealth-building strategies. Remember, you can always listen to past shows by going to financialfocusradio.com or Download our smartphone app today.
While you're at financialfocusradio.com listening to our podcast, make sure you click on contact and you can send us an email message. You can sign up for our free newsletter. One will be going out next Wednesday or so on the 15th of March.
That's Friday.
Thank you, Tyler. I couldn't get my calendar.
Thursday.
So next Thursday. Yeah, next Thursday. So sign up for that, and you can get our number to call our office if you want to sign up for a free one-hour portfolio review with one of our financial professionals. Or you can catch the number to the show, 877-670-7117. That's our listener hotline. Give us a call. Leave us your question in our voicemail box anytime during the week, and we will take it and we will answer it on a show. And if you leave your email address somewhere in the message, we will also send you an MP3 just in case you aren't glued to your radio at that particular moment when we answer your question. We certainly want to make sure we get your question answered. Mr. Producer, you might get ready. We're going to have another Shame of the Week coming up here, too. Just I forgot to tell you. Well, as you know, everybody knows, we're having a party this week and we're celebrating the 9th anniversary of this bear market, the second longest ever in history. The S&P 500 bottomed at 677 when it closed on March the 9th, 2009, ending a 17-month bear market, which seemed like it was forever, in which the stock market fell, as measured by the S&P 500, 57%. A weekly survey of stock investors on March the 4th, 2009, indicated 70% of them were bearish, the highest bearish sentiment ever recorded. And I bring up that point to prove to you, to show that you can't follow the herd, because nobody thought it was the bottom, because 70% of them were bearish. And so you trying to pick the bottom and pick the top is a fool's errand. It can't be done. And that's why the average investors returned something like 4% over the last 30 years, when comparable large cap mutual funds have returned 10% per year.
Investor sentiment is usually opposite indicator, meaning like when investor sentiment is very, very bullish, that usually is not good for the market. When investor sentiment is really negative, that's usually really good for the market. And, you know, you can go back and look at investor sentiment in different parts of the market, and it holds true going back to the beginning of the market. And whether that's stocks or houses or any market, it's always been true.
Yes, it does. So there was so much shame to be spread around, we had to have a second shame of the week this week. And this one is handed out to the Oregon legislature as they adjourned. The inmates have left the asylum and are back amongst the real people, and I'm sure many are getting an earful. Two things they didn't do while they were in the legislature this short session, or they did do or they undid. The Trump tax cuts reduced taxes on small business pass-throughs, helping small businesses in their tax load to make them more efficient, more profitable, help the small business owners, and i.e. their employees. And they decoupled from the federal tax to say that the state of Oregon decoupled and says small business owners will not get a comparable tax reduction on their state taxes that they're going to get on their federal taxes, i.e. they'll end up with a tax increase of what we would have seen if they just stayed coupled to the federal tax thing. And that's going to hurt small business, isn't it, Tyler?
Yeah, I mean, it's they got to pay for Bilotti's $40,000 a month PERS benefit, right, somehow. And so, I mean, the state of Oregon, it seems to me, this is based on what I've experienced since I've lived here 12 years or so, that they are the least business friend. I mean, I grew up in New Hampshire, so this is where I'm coming from. Sure. And I lived in California also. But it seems to me that state of Oregon is the least business friendly state that I've ever lived by a pretty wide margin, in that they don't do things to encourage entrepreneurship and people wanting to start businesses or rewarding businesses, other than Nike, you know what I mean? But Nike is such a giant employer in the state of Oregon. But, you know, they've done some things to Nike that even almost made Phil Knight move Nike's headquarters. So it boggles my mind you know, in Bend, I mean, in the state, Bend has the most applications for new businesses in the state of Oregon. And Bend is a very
per capita.
Bend is a very entrepreneurial city, but that has a lot more to do with the people wanting to live here for the lifestyle rather than it being a business friendly state. Because if you were going to go to a place that was very business friendly, Oregon would be way, way down on the list. And what is to me very, very ironic is we are surrounded by states state of Nevada is very friendly to businesses. State of Washington is more friendly. State of Idaho is more friendly. Wyoming. And so it boggles my mind what they do in Salem sometimes.
And I know many of you had been hopeful, and we've talked about it on the show and warned you not to get the cart in front of the horse, but there was a provision in the Trump tax bill that would have allowed people to use their 529s, their college savings plans, for K through 12 school education. And the Oregon Democrats said that they didn't want that to happen for things. The Oregon Democrats, including State Treasurer Tobias Reed and some other lawmakers, said they opposed using the state's college savings plan for private education. So
this one isn't a tax revenue thing. Like, this doesn't make any sense, right?
Oh, I agree. None of it makes sense.
But this one really, like, it doesn't increase revenue to the state. So it's just them saying, no, if you get into let's say one of your kids gets into Juilliard and you want to use your 529 funds for that, too bad, you can't do it. And there's no rationale behind it.
No, there is no rationale behind it except the Oregon legislature led by the Democrats did not want to see any tax cuts for anybody at the end of the day, and we see more tax increases. And so I don't even mean to get political when I say that, but many of you that were hoping, grandparents, hoping that you'd be able to have your child go or your grandchild go to some private school education aren't going to be able to use that 529 money for it going forward. So,
I mean, I don't think is a political thing because it doesn't increase the revenue to the state of Oregon from a tax standpoint. It's just a stupid thing that they're not allowing.
And I don't understand it. And so that's why it is the shame of the week. Well, we have a few minutes for a financial free for all. We have 2 minutes. And so we're going to do that. One of the things we talk a lot about, people who don't know what kind of tax bond funds they have in their accounts and they put themselves at risk. And I got an example. I had one of the fund company representatives come in and pitch me on a fund this week that's supposed to be the hot new fund. And he pointed out to me, see how it's outdone the benchmark. But when we dug into it, it has high yield junk bonds in it. They have leverage and they actually own some stocks, not just bonds. So it's just not a bond fund. So it actually did badly.
It actually performance wise did badly considering what it owned.
Over the last year.
I mean, it did well against the aggregate bond index, but that shouldn't be its index.
Right, shouldn't be its index. So you have to be very careful and you have to know, and I pointed out to you that there's people out there selling your financial advisor who doesn't take the time to understand the funds, the quote-unquote hot fund of the week, and it ends up in your portfolio and your financial advisor doesn't actually understand it. So if you don't know what's in your portfolio and your bond fund, give us a call, 800-743-0988. We'll help go through your bond portfolio, tell you the risks, tell you the bombs, because there are lots of bombs out there and you need to be very, very careful. The number one risk that Tyler and I and Josh and Sarah and Marvin see every week in our offices are bond funds that are primed to be explosive devices and sink your portfolio. So you need to be very careful. If you have a question for the show, call us 877-670-7117 or email us financialfocusradio.com. Click on contact. We're going to be right back in a jiffy.
Thank you for joining Financial Focus Radio Show, The Truth in Wealth Building. Call the show anytime at 877-670-7117. We'll try to answer your question on the air in the following weeks. You can also email the show at troy@northwestquadrantwealth.com. We look forward to hearing from you.
Welcome back, and you found the birthday party for the 9th year birthday of the bull market, second longest ever in the history of the stock market. Occurred on March the 9th, 2009, when the S&P 500 hit a closing low of 667, hit an intraday low of 666. So join the party known as Financial Focus Radio, and the best way to do, the best present you could bring is your question. So give us a call at 877-670-7117. Again, that's 877-670-7117. Or you can email us. Financialfocusradio.com is the site to go to. Click on contact, and you can send us an email. You can do that all week long, and we'll collect them for next week's show. The USA has kept records on economic expansions, which is a little different than bull markets, and contractions since 1854. The current expansion, which began in July 2009 as the economy recovered, is in its 105th month. It is its third largest expansion in history, trailing only expansions that ran from 1991 to 2001. And 1961 through 1969. And those are both pretty impressive periods for the market.
Wait, in 92 we had a recession, so that one can't be right, but whatever. But I
it
I
didn't
mean,
count. It wasn't long. It wasn't two quarters. It was only one quarter of the recession.
But we, I mean, this one, for all, I can't imagine it's not going to, you know, knock on wood here, but I can't imagine it's not going to be the longest ever. And the reason for that is, especially you look at the last one that was this long, we got some very accelerated 6.5% GDP growth in that one, and we've been 3 or less in this one and for those 9 years. And so, to me, it's the total economic expansion that happens, not the length that matters. And so, you know, don't take my word for it. Much smarter people than I that have been around a lot longer than I, like Byron Wien, who's historically been a very bearish guy, thinks that the soonest we could have another recession will be 2020, and that's the soonest. And so, you know, I hope he's right. This economic expansion, while it has been long, it hasn't been that robust, and I think that's why ultimately this one can continue to go.
Remember, bull markets do not die of old age. They die of excesses, too much debt, too much spending, too much of something going on out there, too much risk.
Too expensive.
Yeah, too much inflation, things like that. Too high interest rates. Those are what kill bull markets, not age. So don't get fixated on age. Get fixated, as Tyler said, on what's happened the last 9 years and how it's been really sort of a slow and go and steady recovery versus a rocket ship to the moon. And it's the only thing I worry about in Tyler ending the recession sooner than later is some esoteric event.
Yeah, some war, some bombing, something like that. But, you know, there are signs we're starting to see signs of excess, and, you know, we're starting to see big credit card debt and delinquency starting to increase and student loan debt. And so there are signs where it's starting to happen, but we're a ways from it becoming excess. But Troy's right. We could have some external situation with North Korea or whatever it might be that nobody could foresee from an economic standpoint.
Well, it is time for a financial free-for-all. You can participate by calling us at 877-670-7117 or emailing us. Go to financialfocusradio.com, click on contact, send us an email. You can do that 24/7, 365. Got an email in our inbox this week, and the writer's question is, should you buy an index fund or just a handful of stocks when investing? What gives you better returns and diversification, Tyler?
Well, that's sort of a
loaded
question.
That's a big question.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'll just be very generic in my answer. I'll answer the last part of your question first. From a diversification standpoint, buying an index, let's say you buy the S&P 500 index fund, Vanguard, you're going to have quite a bit, you know, you have 500 stocks, so you have a lot more diversification in that than you're going to have buying individual securities. There is some diminishing level of diversification once you are buying individual securities, once you get out past a certain number. But for 99% of the people out there listening, buying an index fund is going to be much better for them, because essentially what you're doing is making a bet on the future of the global economy, but more specifically the U.S. economy. And so in the example I gave you of the S&P 500, remember something like 56% of the revenue inside of the S&P 500 comes from outside the United States. So you could almost consider that a globally diversified portfolio as well. So for most people out there listening, picking individual stocks is not a good plan, because, you know, it's interesting. We could have a client portfolio, let's say, with 50 stocks in it. And we do have some of these portfolios where we have 50 stocks in it. And let's say in a year like last year when the market was good, we might have 47 of those stocks up and only three of them are down. And the clients want to talk about the three that are down, even though, you know, most of the portfolio is up. And in fact, usually those three that are down, those clients want to sell them. And those are the ones that we have the most conviction on. And so individual stocks in portfolios can be very, very dangerous for people. We see people do things like, you know, buy General Electric at 25 and it trades down to 14, and they say, I'm going to wait till it gets back to 25 to sell it. That's a disastrous plan for managing your money. And so buying indexes gets that sort of individual company bias out of the equation, and you're just sort of making a bet on the future of the U.S. economy and future of earnings in this country.
It's all like how we talked earlier in the show. It's about not getting too complicated, not setting yourself up for problems that you're creating through biases like Tyler laid out. And we all have them. Tyler and I have them. And we have to have conversation as professionals sometimes about things and try to get our biases out of it and look at it holistically in nature. And doing it, as Tyler said, helps take away some of those biases, because you're buying asset allocation or sectors of the market rather than just one individual stock that you can over-focus upon.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's lots of examples. A good example last year, Boeing had – I mean, Boeing's up 100% over the last 12 months, and it's been just an absolute – and I think Boeing's a great company, but, you know, there's times when you have to maybe take some profits. We have another company in client portfolios called Cognex, and that stock was up 150% in 8 months, and so we took profits on that. We didn't sell the whole position. We just said, okay, let's you know, cut the position in half. And clients are like, why are you selling that? That thing's doing so well. And of course, during the sell-off, it was down something like 40%. And so it ended up being the right thing. You need, if you're going to buy individual stocks, most of you out there don't have the discipline to do it. So buying an index is a better plan.
And as we've said repeatedly on today's show and other shows, it's all about discipline, especially in these volatile markets that we're back into, which are the normal, not the abnormal. If you have a question for the show, give us a call. 877-670-7117, or go to financialfocusradio.com, click on contact. You can send us an email. You remember, you can do it on both, 24/7, 365. We'll be right back.
The opinions voiced in this program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, and financial advisor or tax advisor prior to investing. Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advice offered through Northwest Quadrant Wealth Management, a registered investment advisor and separate entity from LPL Financial. The mission is clear. Give transparent wealth building advice for 2 hours every week. Welcome to our second hour of Financial Focus Radio Show with your hosts, Troy Reinhart and Tyler Simonis. Let's get back to the show.
Well, you found the second half of the birthday. The cake is out. The candles are lit as we celebrate the ninth anniversary, the ninth birthday of the second longest bull market ever in the United States Stock Exchange. And so glad you could join the party. Important numbers you need to know for those of you coming bearing gifts. The best gift you can bring is your question. So utilize the number 877-670-7117 or email us. Go to financialfocusradio.com, click on contact, and you can send us an email or again call 877-670-7117. That's our listener hotline, 24/7, 365. Since 1950, there have been 59 different 10-year periods, i.e. the 10 years from 50 to 59, 51 to 60, 62 to 61, so on and so forth. The S&P 500 has gained at least 6% per year total return in 48 of those 59 decade-long periods, 81% of the time. And I bring that up as we have a question and we kick off a financial free-for-all. We got an email this week from a listener that says, I don't know if I can take another 2007, 2008, early 2009 in my portfolio. Should I just sell out and go to cash and wait for the market correction and get back in later? Or should I just ride it out? And this is a question we get all the time. We try to remind you the Market Timers Hall of Fame is an empty room in Paducah, Kentucky, because nobody can pick the top, nobody can pick the bottom. And so you need to be very careful. And it's all about getting your risk tolerance right to begin with, isn't it, Tyler?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, that plan sounds great, right? I'm going to get out.
Just when they ring that bell.
Miss the market decline and get back in somewhere near the bottom. That sounds like a great plan. Unfortunately, it's impossible to achieve. And so it always confounds me, you know, that some people out there, when they hire a financial advisor, they think they're hiring the financial advisor to do just that. And I always say to them, well, if the financial advisor could do that, that financial advisor would be retired because he or she would be a billionaire knowing how to time markets because you could add leverage and do all these things. So while it sounds like a great plan, it is flat out impossible. And if anybody comes to you and professes to be able to do that, grab your wallet and run because they are a snake oil salesman and they are going to lower your returns over time. So, you know, Warren Buffett, his annual letter came out 2 weeks ago, 86 years old now. No, he's 87. He was born in 1930, so 88. He was born August 30th, 1930. So
he'll be 88 this coming
So August. He, you know, the things he's seen in his life. I mean, the Dow was at 60 when he was born, and now it's essentially at 25,000. And so, you know, he saw some, you know, he saw the Great Depression, he saw World War II, he saw some unbelievable things in his lifetime. But what is the common theme is the market did fabulously well. The U.S. economy has been an unbelievable engine for creating wealth in this country, and that's going to be true going forward. So market corrections are to get people who shouldn't own stocks out of the market, right? They are to shake out the weak hands who shouldn't be true owners of businesses and get them out of it because they are unfortunately not focused on what they actually own, which is a piece of American business. And a piece of American business has always been something that's been a good bet. And so, yes, when we have a recession and economic activity in this country slows down, that means earnings slow down. So for temporary periods of time, companies are worthless because a company is worth is based on its profit, right? So if somebody was going to buy Troy and my business, Northwest Quadrant Wealth Management, they would pay us a multiple of our earnings, and they'd say, okay, your business did X last year. We're going to pay you this amount of a multiple based on your earnings. And if we were in a recession and our revenue was down, that number would be smaller. But it would be a good bet because, you know, Troy and I believe that we're going to grow earnings over time. That's true at Nike. It's true at Costco. It's true at Amazon. It's true at all these great businesses. And so market corrections are opportunities that people should take advantage of rather than something to panic on. And so, you know, we say it over and over and over, but it just confounds me that people think that you're paying a financial – I mean, if I could time markets, if Troy could time markets, we wouldn't have to have any clients because we could manage our $10 billion and be fat, dumb, and happy. We're fat, dumb, and happy anyways, but it's not because we have $10 billion. And so, you know, we just know that we can't time markets, but if we participate in the long-term growth of U.S. stocks, we're going to be fine.
And it's all about getting your risk tolerance right, and it's making sure that your current financial advisor or ones in the past or one in the future don't take their risk tolerance and impose it on you. And what is risk tolerance? It's your ability to understand and undertake volatility, so when markets sell off. So it's how much you can stand the ups and downs of the market. Because Tyler and I know history proves this to be true. Like you said, when Warren Buffett was born, the Dow Jones Industrial was 60. Today it's 225,000, and lots of bad things that happen. And that's a straight line, but you don't get there in a straight line. You get there up through a series of ups and downs, more ups than downs. But still, when the downs come, they are sometimes epic in nature, and your ability to withstand that downward volatility is what risk tolerance is all
about.
Yeah,
I mean, risk is a really funny thing, especially if you own something that isn't going to go to zero. So let's say you own the S&P 500 index fund at Vanguard. You know, the longer your time horizon, the less risk you're going to take. So, you know, the S&P 500 index fund, if I buy it today and my time horizon is a month, the risk in that investment goes up dramatically. If I put $100,000 in the S&P 500 and I need it to be $100,000 or more in a month, my risk just went off the charts because that's just a bet. But when I start to go out 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, and 30 years, my risk sort of almost goes away, especially when I look at 30 years away. I mean, at 42.
That's a sign of old
age. If I go 30 years out, by the time I'm 72, my risk of owning U.S. stocks is so minimal, it's not funny, because I'm very confident that stocks are going to be significantly higher 30 years out. So, you know, risk has a lot to do with your time horizon. So, you know, my son who turns 13 tomorrow, he's going to need the money in his college savings plan in 5 years. And so, the risk I can take with that money goes down significantly compared to the risk that I can take for my retirement at 42 years old. So risk, as long as you own things that aren't going to go to zero, risk, you have to always associate it with a time horizon, because the longer your time horizon is, the better, you know, your chances of making money are.
Right. But people, if you don't have that risk tolerance right, you don't have your planning horizon correctly, because we see people all the time that bring in cash and say, I'm going to buy a new car in 2 years. Let's just invest this in the market and make money. And we tell them, if you need money in 2 years, it's got to be in a very safe, secure instrument, because we have to know what it's going to be, the amount it's going to be worth, so you can buy the car that you want to go buy or the targeted for. And taking risk with that would not be warranted, versus, as Tyler said, even me at 55 years old, and if I don't retire for another 15 years, that's still a long time horizon. I'll go through a bear market or maybe two in that period of time, but I'm confident markets will be markedly higher then than they are today. And that's certainly been true in my lifetime, too. If you have a question for the show, call us 877-670-7117 or email us. Financialfocusradio.com is the place to go. Click on contact. A little screen will pop up, and you'll be able to type us a fun email. So email us like our listeners do all the time, and we'll answer your questions on the show. Again, 877-670-7117 is the number to call. We'll be right back.
Connect to the Financial Focus Radio Show on our social networks, Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. Listen to past shows, get our daily market blog, and keep up to date on market happenings. Let's get back to the show.
Welcome back to Financial Focus Radio. Go to our website, financialfocusradio.com. Lots of information to be had there. You can sign up for our free e-newsletter. One will go out next Thursday. I'm not sure what we're going to talk about yet, but I'm sure there will be something happening in the world for us to commentate upon for your wealth building interest. Tyler and I will both be there, so stick around for that. But while you're at Financial Focus Radio, you can also look up our number for our worldwide headquarters, 800-743-0988. Sign up for a free portfolio review, which means 1 hour of one of our financial professionals' time, no cost, no obligation, going over the agenda year. We can talk about the investments you have in your accounts, the accounts you have, important things like how you pay your advisor, because we know many of you do not know how you pay your advisor. And there's sneaky ways advisors get paid, and they can tell you that they're not paying, you're not paying them anything. But that is a lie. Every financial advisor makes something, whether it's transparent to you or not, is the question. Since the rising by 6.1% in 1990, inflation as measured by the Consumer Price Index has averaged just 2.3% per year and has been as high as 4% in only 1 year, 2007, over the last 27 years, 1991 to 2017. And that's one of the, I bring that factoid forward, is inflation is not something to be feared, and it's a normal part, and we just need to realize we've been in an abnormally low period of inflation, and we do everything's reversion to the mean in the world, coming back to averages, and so seeing inflation in the system is better than seeing deflation in the time.
Yeah, I mean, a little 2-3% inflation is actually good. Deflation is not good. I mean, there's sort of a sweet spot. And for my adult life, we've had a very low inflationary environment. And for most people's memory, we've had a – it's people that are Troy's age and older that remember the 70s and the runaway inflation that we had under Jimmy Carter. And so, you know, we're not worried about going back to that. And when people – you know, there's more and more talk about wage inflation and then that translating into inflation in the rest of the economy, which will probably happen. But – remember, inflation is not a bad thing. Some inflation in the system and some parts of the economy do really well with a little bit of inflation.
So it's like one headline I saw this week on a financial news site. It says, X, Y, and Z hedge fund manager says that stocks could fall by 30 to 50% in the next 5 years. And it's like, no, duh, really? We have a bear market.
They could go up by 30 to 50% in the next 5 years, yeah, too, yeah, though. Yeah. So, I mean, you know.
But they put those headlines on there to scare. And those things are normal corrections in the market that we see every 3 to 9 years in a bear market.
Yeah, I mean, the more sensational so there's a guy named Dick Vobey, who's a banking analyst. And, Lloyd Blankfein, who's the CEO of Goldman Sachs, said he's going to resign by the end of the year. And Dick Vobey came on CNBC and talked to for 30 minutes probably about how bad of a CEO Lloyd Blankfein was. And
he was on fire.
He should have been fired a long time ago. And the reality is Dick Vobey has just started a new firm and he has no clients. And so he's trying to make a name for himself and his firm. And so a lot of headlines that come out, those headlines that come out. I mean, Lloyd Blankfein, the banking index returned something like 6.5% over the time that Lloyd Blankfein was the CEO of Goldman Sachs, and Goldman Sachs's performance trounced that. So, you know, I mean, a lot of times these people come out with these crazy headlines to get press, because otherwise they wouldn't get the press and they wouldn't get their firm out there in the press. And that's a lot of that stuff is that. I mean, the Buffetts of the world never do that because they're never worried about self-promotion.
So moral of the story is don't resist. Moral of the story is resist the temptation to react to financial headlines. They will drive you crazy in the short term because markets do react to it like a teenager rolling out of bed. You never know. Tyler's going to find this out coming up, and you probably already see it. Teenagers roll out of bed, and you're never sure if it's the happy child, the sad child, the indifferent child, the angry child. And that's the way the markets are. Every morning when I come in to do our market report, it's a coin flip. What happened? What headline is pushing the markets around at any particular moment? But you have to be a long-term seasoned investor to not react to those headlines, because those headlines will, number one, make you crazy if you watch them too much, and number two, they will lead you astray in building your wealth in the long term. Right, Tyler?
Yeah, I mean, the financial press is very dangerous and gets more and more dangerous, it feels like, every year for the average investor. And, you know, we have clients call our office, and when we hear CNBC or Bloomberg on the TV in the background, first thing we do is say, shut that off, go for a walk, you'll be much better off.
We tell them very slowly,
back
go to
away
your
from
TV,
the TV.
Turn it off, turn on the Disney Channel, something like that. Because the number one enemy to your wealth building efforts is you. It is you and your emotions, and it's the number one thing. Every fact, every piece of research ever done bears that out, and Tyler and I will stand on that till the day we die, and hopefully that's not soon.
But you want to watch something that makes you feel good, turn on the Oregon State Beavers baseball team, 13-0, and that'll make you feel better.
And they, I can't remember, did they open
up? They're
playing
Fullerton this weekend.
Fullerton. Cal Fullerton. Yeah. So don't let your emotions get a hold of you, because that's what happens when we talk about risk tolerance and not having your risk tolerance right and those kinds of things. Got a question from an email question from a listener who says he's 10 years for retirement and he's afraid he's coming up short. Is there any way to accelerate my retirement savings?
I mean, other than saving more, I mean, the math is simple, right? You're going to have to spend less so you can save more. I wouldn't suggest you take more risk with your portfolio. That usually isn't, you know, if your risk tolerance is a certain way, then it has to usually stay that way. Just you're going to have to save more, delay retirement, think about retirement differently. I mean, we talk about this with people all the time. You know, this idea that you're going to retire and play golf every day, golf's going to become not fun real fast. So the idea is you can maybe delay retirement a little bit longer. Your Social Security will go up. You'll be able to save more. And then maybe work part-time in retirement. Doing something you like will be, you know. So people have to, I think a lot of people have to adjust what retirement's going to look like for them, because people are living longer in retirement and their money has to last longer. So working part-time, now it's good for you, right? You have something to add to society, but, you know, it's good for your brain. And so working part-time in retirement is a suggestion we have for lots of people.
That's one of the things that isn't talked about enough. It is at our office with the people that come in for free retirement reviews or our clients. But people are woefully underestimating life expectancy and longevity and what that means and the money you need to save and how you're going to live your life and what retirement means for you. Because we're in a period of time where people could live 30, 40, maybe even 50 years in retirement. And that's a long, long time. And your money has to last you a long time. And you have to be useful and productive during that time, no matter what you do. And so remember that when you're doing, that's the most overlooked thing. When people say they want a retirement, they want to focus on their finances. But you also have to focus on, what does retirement mean? And what are you going to do to stay healthy and productive? We'll be right back with more Financial Focus Radio. So stick around.
Thanks for listening to Financial Focus Radio on our Northwest network of stations in Bend, Portland, Eugene, and John Day. Remember, you can always catch our shows on our website, financialfocusradio.com, or download our app from iTunes.
Go to iTunes Store or Google Play, type in Financial Focus Radio. Up will pop our app. You'll know you got it when you see Tyler and my smiling, sunny faces greeting you to come in and listen to our podcast. And you can download it on your phone. Take the Truth and Wealth Building wherever you may go. Or go to financialfocusradio.com. Click on the Spreaker button and you can listen to us via Spreaker and listen to all our past shows that we have archived there. Life expectancy at birth in the USA was 51.7 in 1916. Life expectancy at birth was 78.6 in 2016. Thus, life expectancy has increased by 10 years every 37 years. And that doesn't seem to be a rate that's going to slow down anytime soon with the invention of medicines and stuff. And that just puts a point on our conversation from the last segment that really longevity is the new paradigm in retirement planning. And people woefully underestimate that and what's on the horizon, don't they, Todd?
Yeah, I mean, in 78, I mean, a lot of relatively healthy and affluent people, certainly the clients we serve, are living well past 78. You know, they're living well into their 90s, and we have some 100-year-old plus clients. And so that, you know, you can't plan for average, right? You got to plan for sort of the long end, you know. You have to look at genetics and longevity in your family, because that has more to do with it than how you live your life. And so, you know, if you're a 65-year-old, you have to plan on 30 or 35 years in retirement. Yeah, you might die at 78, but you might die at 98 or 100, and so you have to plan for that. And not enough people do, and that gets them into trouble. The hardest part about retirement planning for people, and this is true for Troy and I too, is, you know, when we say to a 65-year-old couple, we say, okay, break the rest of your life up into five-year increments, and which five are going to be the best? It's always the next five, right? Because you can do the most. Once you're 95, you can't do a whole lot usually. And so you're able to spend the most amount of money right when you retire, but it's scary to do so because you want it to last as long as you do. You don't want to be the one in the nursing home with a $15 million investment portfolio that you can't spend because you're in a nursing home and in a wheelchair. And so, you know, you don't want to die with a giant portfolio. You want to die with a giant portfolio of memories of great experiences. And so that is the biggest challenge for financial advisors and clients or investors is how to deal with that. I have the ability to spend the most amount of money in retirement, in the beginning of retirement, because that's when I'm my healthiest and most active. And so I need to make sure that I don't spend so much that I run out of money, but I don't want to not spend any, so I have this giant portfolio when I die that my kids or grandkids inherit.
So how does that manifest itself in your wealth-building efforts? Really in two ways. Number one, it means, well, more than two ways, but two ways to be simple. Number one is that you have to save more. You have to make sure you're a prudent saver as you go through your working life. And so you have ample resources to take care of yourself. And number two, it means the old idea that you go to bonds and clip coupons is sort of a broken system. To be able to keep up with inflation and grow your money and keep it active during retirement for a longer retirement and a longer life, you're going to have to be more invested in a higher percentage of stocks versus your portfolio than maybe you did even 20 years ago when interest rates were higher. And as interest rates climb, that'll change a little bit. But for the most part, people are going to have to be well into equities much longer than they ever have had before. And that is a sort of change in thinking for many financial advisors and many people.
Yeah, I mean, so for a long time when rates were significantly higher than they are now, retirement planning was relatively easy, right? I mean, you had, let's say you could put a bond portfolio together that was going to yield 6 or 6.5%. And it was investment-grade bonds, so you could put half of the client's money in bonds and the other half in a diversified stock portfolio, and their income needs would be pretty well taken care of just from the bond part of their portfolio. Obviously, that's changed. You can't put together a bond portfolio of investment-grade bonds that are going to yield you 6. They're going to yield you 2.5 or 3 at the most, or maybe more like 2 to 2.5. You're going to have more of your money allocated just to equities, which is going to make your portfolio more volatile. And so it's a different, much more difficult thing to help people in retirement now, because it's a portfolio has to be looked at from a total return perspective in retirement, meaning appreciation plus income, versus it used to be people would focus on income with a little bit of appreciation, and that has changed dramatically. And that's why I feel like people today more than ever when they're retiring need the help of a good financial advisor to help them generate income, not sell them an annuity, but help position their portfolio so that it generates income in a safe way.
So if the first answer when you go visit somebody you're interviewing new financial advisors or you're rolling out your 401k as you retire, if the first thing they say out of their mouth is, you need an annuity, you need to get up and run because you're being sold a high commission product that may not, well, is certainly not in your best interest 99 times out of 100. So be very, very careful of annuity salesmen. We got an email from a young lady who says she's 20 years old. She's just out of college, starting her career, only has a few dollars to save every month. And is she confusing quote-unquote activity with accomplishment, as Troy would say, by starting with just a few dollars an ounce? And the answer is a clear, resounding no, you're not confusing activity with accomplishment. The sooner you get started, even with $25 a month or $50 a month or $100 a month, and then the important part is getting started, and then number two, as you can, not letting every pay increase go into your pocket, but funneling that some of that to your retirement savings is even better. And it's particularly true if your company has a 401k and you get a match.
Yeah, I mean, time is the most, one of the most important things in terms of saving for retirement, letting that compounding work for you. So there's all these studies that have been done of people starting saving at 18 versus, say, 30, and the amount that the 30-year-old has to save versus the 18-year-old and to get to the same, let's say, million-dollar portfolio is dramatically different. So that if you can start early, no matter what the dollar amount is, it makes a dramatic difference because of the power of compounding on your money.
Bill, my father took me to Bill Moore, the patriarch of our firm, when I was 18 years old and made me put $100 a month from the money I was making into a common blue chip mutual fund. And my dad asked me 40 years later if that made me mad when he made me do that. And I said, it didn't make me mad then, but it makes me mad now. And he goes, why is that? And I said, gosh, why didn't you make me save $200 a month? And so I've never, and I can tell you, young lady or the question asker, I never missed that $100 that came out of my checking account every month. I mean, I drank just as much beer when I was, of course, of a legal age than I did, but I just drank.
That was so long
cheaper.
Ago, legal age was like 14, right?
I drank. They didn't card you back then. But I never regret a dollar, then I never missed a dollar, and it's turned into a lot of money as I've done that every month of my life since I was 18 years old. And it really was, it was in the most common of blue chip mutual funds that didn't invest in alcohol and tobacco and firearm stocks. It was started for a bunch of Tipton nuns in Tipton, Indiana. So, and to show you that you don't have to be, you don't have to start with a whole bunch of money. Time is your best ally, and you don't have to be fancy. You can be plain Jane and boring.
You are listening to Financial Focus Radio Show, where you get straightforward financial advice every week from the partners at Northwest Quadrant Wealth Management. Troy Reinhardt and Tyler Simonis tackle the many issues that we face in our wealth-building strategies. Remember, you can always listen to past shows by going to financialfocusradio.com or download our smartphone app today.
Welcome back to one final segment of Financial Focus Radio. If you missed anything, go to our website, financialfocusradio.com. You can listen to our podcast, or better yet, if you got a smartphone, go to Google Play or iTunes Store, type in Financial Focus Radio, and you can download our app, which will give you exclusive access to all our radio shows that we have archived, and you can never, that way you never miss a minute of Financial Focus Radio.
Better yet, if you don't have a smartphone, take a picture of your dumb phone and send it to us.
Oh, yeah, and especially if it's got big numbers.
My dad finally last year got a, when he was here in Bend, actually got a smartphone. And boy, oh boy, that's like watching an elephant try to type.
Did he go for an Android or an
iPhone? I don't remember. I just couldn't. I couldn't believe it took him so long. My kids didn't know what the heck he had in his pocket before he got a smartphone. It's pretty funny.
That's, my dad says, my phone does more than make telephone calls, and I don't know anything to do with it. My dad has three friends on Facebook. It's me and my two brothers.
Nice.
So he can keep a track of what the grandkids are doing. That's right. So, and remember, you can always go to our Northwest Quadrant Wealth Management Facebook page. And every day we type our market report there and we put it there. And other information, post our YouTube videos of our e-news report. Lots of stuff there, Northwest Quadrant Wealth Facebook page. And we're also on Twitter at the handle at nwqradio.com. At NWQ Radio, and we're on. I'm on LinkedIn, Troy Reinhardt. So, three ways you can get a hold of us if you don't want to use our website. Many people
you can
ask,
send me a message in a bottle.
I send Tyler smoke signals, or I just yell at him across the hall from our office. As I yell, I spend more time yelling at the TV than I spend yelling.
It's been
at
easy lately.
It has been. God, it's crazy. It's amazing what people, stupid things people say just to get on TV. Well, lots of people ask us. I'm interviewing financial advisors. I want to change financial advisors, or I want to find out more about my own financial advisor that I currently have. And I can't find much on Google, or they don't have a website or something such as that. Remember, you can go to brokercheck.org. That's B-R-O-K-E-R. Check check.org, and that'll take you to a government website. And on that website, brokercheck.org will tell you. You just type in a name, and or the company they work for, and it'll tell you where the broker currently works, their employment history, what licenses they have, exams they've passed. It'll also tell you if they've been charged or convicted of criminal felonies, charged or convicted of investment-related misdemeanors.
Bankruptcies.
So, yeah, subject to industry disciplinary action, investigations that are ongoing, undergoing, arbitration proceedings, or customer-consumer-initiated complaints. So it's a great place. Again, that's brokercheck.org. And it's funny, it's amazing the stuff you find on there, isn't it, Tyler?
Yeah. If they don't have a website, I don't know that you want to work with them anyway. If they're not investing the little bit of money it costs to have a website, I don't know that you want to hire them as your financial advisor. So.
Right. But remember, a website is just that. It's a commercial, it's an electronic pamphlet, and they're putting their best foot forward. So if you want to find secondary backup to whether they're good guys and good gals or not, go to BrokerCheck.org.
And I would tell you that some of you here in Bend, you should look up your financial advisor on BrokerCheck.org. You would probably not be pleasantly surprised at some of the stuff that's on there. I don't know that if I was hiring a financial advisor, I would want to see bankruptcies and having to give properties back from a person who's supposed to be managing my money can't manage their own.
Right. Good point, Tyler. And as we see lots of advisors move around is – places like UBS is making their advisors / employees advisors sign new non-solicit agreements. To get their bonus, they're going to have to agree that if they leave, they're not going to solicit their former or their current clients for 12 months. And we saw them do away with the protocol, which basically said if an advisor left, they wouldn't go and sue each other and fight over the clients, and clients could follow one another. Morgan Stanley and then UBS backed out of that protocol and are now aggressively going after advisors who try to take their clients with them, and it's causing huge roadblocks for clients to stay with the people they want to stay with, isn't it, Tyler?
Yeah, I mean, this is the industry shooting itself in the foot. I mean, The old line brokerage firms, the Wells Fargos, the Morgan Stanleys, the Merrill Lynches, the UBSs of the world, need to wise up and realize, you know, they fought so hard against the Department of Labor rule about making everybody a fiduciary and everybody having to act in the financial best interest of their clients, not just as suitable recommendations as brokers. They fought like crazy, spent hundreds of millions of dollars lobbying on that, and thankfully they lost. They need to wake up and realize that the industry is now about transparency, is about acting as a fiduciary, about what's doing right for clients, not selling people high commission products that are good for the firm. And so these firms are becoming very protectionist And it's going to backfire on them because more advisors and their clients will leave to a model. And I happen to think our model in terms of the way of doing business is the correct one, not just because I'm in it. When I was in the industry, but I wasn't a financial advisor, there was no question in my mind that an independent fee-based financial advisor was the only place. And that's where I sent my parents to and any family and friends, because I knew the amount of conflicts of interest that existed at those big firms. Those big firms care about their bottom lines and quarterly earnings. They're publicly traded companies. They don't care about their clients. Troy and I are the only people we answer to are our clients. We're not answering to some shareholders or anything like that other than each other. But ultimately, our clients are what pays the bills for us. And so we are transparent. We want clients to know exactly how they pay us, what they pay us. We want them to know what they own. We want to know that they're the only ones that pay us. And so these firms that are sort of railing against that and saying, if you leave our firm, we're going to sue you and we're going to retain the clients. That is not the way that the industry is headed. And these firms are you look at the bad news with Wells Fargo and all these firms. It's going to get worse for these firms until somebody takes the leadership role there and says, wait a second, we need to do what's right by the client. We need to be transparent. Because the greatest thing about this industry and the reason I love it so much is you can do the right thing and still make plenty of money. That's the greatest thing about this business is we're not missing any meals and we can do right by our clients. And that is something I tell you that feels really good about being a financial advisor.
Make sure you can call your financial advisor the F word. That would be fiduciary. Because many financial advisors aren't fiduciaries. So ask your financial advisor, are you a fiduciary? And see what kind of answer you get, and we'll talk about that next week. All right, thanks for being with us. Everybody take care. God bless. Happy birthday, Finn, and go Bees.
You've been listening to Troy Reinhardt and Tyler Simonis from Northwest Quadrant Wealth Management on the radio show Financial Focus. Remember, you can email or call anytime. Just go to our website at financialfocusradio.com. See you next week on Financial Focus. The opinions voiced in this program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, and financial advisor or tax advisor prior to investing. Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advice offered through Northwest Quadrant Wealth Management, a registered investment advisor and separate entity from LPL Financial.